Well, it's always nice for me to get these those introductions, and that was an especially nice one, and I appreciate that, Jerry. The reason I like it is because I'm Dick, and I'm an alcoholic. And I spent so many years of people saying nasty things about me that it seems to be a nice change to come up and have people say a few nice things about me, and I do appreciate that, even if you have to stretch a little bit, Jerry. But I am pleased to be here this afternoon, and this is a lovely conference, and I did take the time out to come and participate in it myself because there are so many good speakers, and I certainly haven't been sorry because it's really been terrific. What I'm going to talk about is sexual dysfunction in the alcoholic, and it's really two subjects that are very dear to my heart, sex and alcoholism. Alcoholism is dear to my heart because I'm a recovering alcoholic. Sex is dear to my heart because I'm a recovering sexually dysfunctional person. Now, I'm not going to tell you the way it was and what happened and what it's like now. But I am going to share with you some of the things I learned because of having that problem and perusing all the literature and attending Masters and Johnson's seminar and Dominia Renshaw's seminars at Loyola University and doing sexual histories and interviewing alcoholics, 6,000 to be exact, at Brighton Hospital over the past 6 or 7 years. So I have accumulated a lot of information, and I thought you may be interested in hearing about it. Now, when I was a drinking alcoholic, or even way back when I was in medical school, I thought sexual dysfunction, you were either impotent as a male or frigid as a female, and I didn't think there was any more to it than that. However, in recent years, of course, we know that there's a lot more to sexual dysfunction. Let's see, where does this go on? There's a lot more to sexual dysfunction than just frigidity and impotence, and now the DSM-3 describes four different types or four different phases of sexual dysfunction. You can have a problem in the desire phase, you can have a problem in the excitatory phase, you can have a problem in the orgasmic phase, or you can have a problem in the recovery the resolution phase. And alcohol actually causes sexual dysfunction in all four of the phases, and I'll be talking about that this afternoon. I think most of us alcoholics at least, have come to believe or get to know that if you get too drunk, you can't participate. So we've all known that experience, or at least I have, and I'm sure a lot of you had. So that we got used to, but we always thought that we knew we'd be better in the morning. As soon as you sobered up, we thought that everything was going to be all right. And this is not, of course, the case. Alcoholism causes, and drug abuse, causes a lot of sexual problems that can go on for weeks and months and, in some cases, even years after you stop drinking. I am reminded of the legend about Winston Churchill when it comes to this, and I don't know if you heard it or not, but a number of years ago, Winston Churchill was at a cocktail party, and Lady Astor was there. And Winston was getting pretty tipsy, as Winston is prone to do sometimes, I'm told. And Lady Astor went up to him, and she looked down her nose at him, and she said, "Sir Winston, you are disgustingly drunk." And he looked at her unabashed, as Winston can do, and he said, "I know, Lady Astor, but you are disgustingly ugly. And I'll be sober in the morning." Now, I don't know anything about Winston Churchill's alcoholism, and I certainly don't know anything about his sex life, but if Winston Churchill had been a sexually dysfunctional alcoholic, his observation would not have been true because he would not necessarily have recovered from either his alcoholism or his sexual dysfunction come the next morning. So this is what we come to realize as studying the various stages of dysfunction and types of dysfunction in alcoholism. It does not go away the next day, and let's look into that just a little bit. Now, what are the causes of sexual dysfunction and alcoholism? Well, I've pretty well narrowed it down to five different types of dysfunctions. There's some learning processes that occur as a result of alcoholism and some of our myths in society that keeps us from functioning well sexually. And we have the physiological changes that can occur. Then there's thinking disorders that come as a result of the drinking that keeps us from having recovery. In other words, it has to do with low self-esteem and so forth. Then there's the feeling disorders that I heard so much about at this conference, the bad feelings, the depressions, and so forth. And these feeling disorders cause problems with intimacy. And if you can't be intimate with somebody, emotionally intimate, it can become quite a problem to be sexually intimate. And then we have the psychiatric disorders, including the depressions and so forth, that may actually be caused by alcoholism. So let's go over those one at a time. The first place is the faith that we have in drugs and alcohol that causes a lot of problems. Alcohol is an aphrodisiac, and this, of course, is what everybody thought they knew for a long time, but now we know actually it is. Actually, it's small amounts of alcohol increases the male hormone in both sexes and therefore gives them increased desire. So what the male finds out, and of course the female too, that when she drinks or he drinks, it increases their desire a little bit. Now, actually, Freud pointed out there are two basic drives. There's the sex drive, and there's the drive for separation. Usually that ends up in being a hostility drive. And if we hit the right amount of sex drive, symbiosis, and the right amount of hostility drive, separation and individuation, the two together cause intimacy. And alcohol then improves that. Alcohol increases the sex drive, decreases the hostility drive, and therefore the person is apt to have more intimacy. And that's exactly what we see. Small amounts of alcohol, the person becomes gregarious, he becomes virile or loving, and they really do get intimate, and therefore alcohol is called a sexual lubrication drug or a gregarious drug and a socializing drug, and it really does work. However, what we also know that when you get chronic alcoholism and you keep on drinking, this causes the sex drive to go down and the hostility drive to go up, and so you get a separation and you get a lot of hostility, and this also can make an ideal situation, and this is what the reputation of alcohol is, if you stop and think about it. Women, for instance, use this this loss of control as an excuse to have sex. Now, think about a man and a woman, for instance, sitting around the same table, drinking out of the same bottle, that bottle being a sign of virility to the male and a sign of loss of control, or an excuse, if you will, to the female. In other words, it makes the prey a better prey and the predator a better predator. And there's no doubt that alcohol is always going to be very popular in our sexual social lives because it does work and it works so well. As a matter of fact, it might be this working. This is what Vernon Johnson calls it works, and it works every time, to quote Vernon Johnson. This is maybe one of the things that causes all that faith in chemicals that increases our denial, because we expect and we need this sexual stimulation, this gregariousness that it caused, and we get, after years and years and years of it working so well, we can't believe that at this time it now is causing the very problem that it used to cure. It's causing the sexual dysfunction problem, it's causing the hostility problem, when in fact it used to help the drive, and it used to decrease aggression drive, making us more intimate and making us more gregarious. And now it backfires and does just the opposite of that. There's also a condition called state-dependent learning. I think that's important to talk about. This was first discovered or talked about by Dr. David Smith of Haight-Ashbury Free Clinic. And we know, for instance, clinically, at Brighton Hospital, I talked to a lot of the patients, and I would imply or say, your sex life probably isn't as good as it used to be. And they would agree with that, that certainly alcohol did interfere with their sex life, but they had some amount of sex life left, and they were they weren't satisfied with it, but they were more satisfied than with what happened when they stopped drinking. Some of those people that I would promise that their sex life would be better when they stopped drinking came back in a few months and would say, "Doc, you said it would get better, and it's worse. I can't perform at all now." And for a while, I had a hard time explaining that and reassuring those people, because things had gotten worse when they stopped drinking. And I really didn't know the explanation of that until I talked to Dr. David Smith of Haight-Ashbury Preclinic, and he described what he called a state-dependent learning phenomena, especially as far as people who started drinking young. Now, let me explain what state-dependent learning is. I'm sure some of you know this from the psychological point of view. If you teach a rat how to do something when the rat is sober, and you get that rat drunk, he won't remember what he learned to do sober. On the other hand, if you teach a rat how to do something drinking, he won't remember how to do it again if he sobers up, unless you give him some to drink again. In other words, if we learn something drinking, we'll remember it better drinking, and if we learn something sober, we'll remember it better sober. Now, take a 12, 13-year-old kid who started on marijuana and alcohol and street drugs and all that when they were that age, and bring them right up to the time they're now 18, 19, 20 and in deep trouble with drugs, and they've had all of their sexual experiences in various states of mind except sober, and put them in a treatment center and have them get sober, and they leave that treatment center and they cannot function sexually. Why? Because they learned all their sexual erotica in various states of mind except sober, and they really have to learn that all over again or they will not be able to perform sexually. Dr. Smith described this group of people, and at first he thought they were hypersexual. He runs this place at Haight-Ashbury Preclinic, and he said he would discharge his youthful patients, and most of his patients were youthful, and he would know that they went down to the local pornographic movie theater, and they would spend 6 or 8 hours there masturbating, watching all this erotic movies. And he first thought these guys or gals are really hypersexual, until he thought about it more clearly, and after he knew them a number of months, and then he realized they were not hypersexual, they were practically asexual. It took all of that stimulation in order to get them to have an orgasm through masturbation with all the visual stimulation and so forth. So we have this situation with a lot of alcoholics, especially those who started drinking or using drugs soon. They have not learned their sexual erotica in sober states of mind, and if they get sober, they certainly will have more of a problem functioning. Now, some of this, of course, is due to the physiological changes that occur with drinking, too, because there are actually some physiological changes that occur with drinking that I'm not going to spend too much time about, because this is covered pretty well in the literature. In fact, there's several tapes of mine around, and there's some articles, including the one in Alcoholism magazine, that tells about this, and I have some other material I want to cover, and the time is limited. So I won't say too much about the physiological changes that occur with alcoholism and drug abuse, except to say they do occur. They're extremely important. There can be changes in the hormone levels, in the vascular, in the blood supply to the pelvic area, to the nerve supply to the pelvic area, and, of course, a lot of medication side effects that I will spend a minute talking about. But alcohol causes all of those changes, and you can tell which ones are due to physical causes or physiological causes, especially in males, because males will not have morning or dream erections if it's due to a physical cause. Everything I've talked about to this time and everything that I will say after the physiological changes will not have the male will continue to have morning or dream erections, and the female will continue to lubricate during dreams, although that's harder to evaluate. And so you can tell a physiological impotence, in other words, from all the psychological ones on that one thing. Now, alcohol causes, in addition to the vascular changes, blood clots in the pelvic organs, aneurysms, changes like diabetes and that in nerves. In addition to all those things, there is a drop in male hormones in both sexes. Small amounts of alcohol, as I mentioned a while ago, is an aphrodisiac. It increases the male hormone in both sexes and therefore increases sexual desire. We know from Dr. Kolodny's work at Masters and Johnson's and other research people that larger amounts of alcohol over a longer period of time lowers the male hormone level in both sexes, also more lowers the luteinizing hormone from the pituitary gland, lowers the male hormone level in both sexes, and therefore knocks out the sex life for a longer period of time. You don't get better the next morning. For instance, what can happen, we used to say at Brighton Hospital, well, I'm sure they still say it, that the desire to have sex will come back 5 days after your last drink. The ability to have sex does not come back until 2 months after your last drink. Now, Claire Bissell said a while ago that a lot of treatment centers have a magical 28-day period for treatment. Well, I don't know what all the reasons for that those are, but I know that there'd be a lot more problems in treatment center if they went for 2 months period of time, because that desire comes back in 5 days, but the ability comes back does not come back until 2 months, and I think it's a good idea to get them out of there before there's all a lot of problems. Incidentally, I might say a word about that right now, because you might get an impression from what I'm going to say this afternoon that I favor sexual dysfunction therapy in a treatment center, and I certainly do not. I don't think that there is no reason to have or need to have or even an indication to have any sexual therapy until the person has been out of treatment for at least 6 months and until they got all their personal relations going well and so forth. So while I think that what I'm saying this afternoon is important for alcoholics and the spouses of alcoholics to know as far as hope for the future, I do not mean to imply for a minute that a treatment center for alcoholism, a detox or a rehab, is any period of time, or is the period of time to be talking about treating sexual dysfunction problems. I think it's putting the cart before the horse, and the first thing, of course, to him is to get a quality sobriety, and then I think you can work on the sexual problems if they don't take care of themselves. Incidentally, that's one of the things my research has shown me, that 95% of the sexual dysfunction problems in alcoholics are self-limiting, and with the program of AA and total abstinence from all drugs and mind-altering drugs, the person does indeed recover spontaneously, and no type of sex therapy would be required anyhow. Now, there's some of the effects of drugs sexual function, I think, is extremely important. It's especially important because a lot of alcoholics are placed on drugs by physicians for a lot of reasons, most of which are not too good. Let's take an example. Let's take the widower syndrome. I was at Masters and Johnson's 6 or 7 years ago, and Masters and Johnson's had just then described the widow-widower syndrome. Now, let me explain what that is. The widow-widower syndrome, Masters took a man by the name of John, we'll say, and he was 55 years old, and his wife was sick and dying of cancer. So he had no heterosexual sex for 2 years during that period of time, for 1 year during that period of time. Actually, she wasn't dead yet. She was sick for a year, so no heterosexual sex for a year. Then she died, and so no heterosexual sex for the second year. At the end of that, the reason I put it that way, heterosexual sex, because this phenomenon is still supposed to go on even if John were to be masturbating during this period of time. At the end of 2 years, the widow lady down the street noticed how hungry and lonely John looked, and so she invited him over for dinner one night, and he goes, and it's surprising how close to the dining room bedrooms are in situations like this, you know. And they end up in the bedroom, and much to poor John's surprise, chagrin, and embarrassment, he isn't able to do a thing. This is what Masters and Johnson's called the widow-widower syndrome, otherwise known as the use-it-or-lose-it phenomenon. If you don't use it for 2 years, you lose it. Now, the reason I think that this is important in alcoholics is because for a lot of reasons, either because of arguments, divorces, too drunk to participate, the hormone levels, for a lot of reasons. A lot of alcoholics do not participate in sex for a couple of year period of time. They might not want to admit that to you, but believe me, it is absolutely true. Years can go by before they participate in sex. So they are indeed suffering from the use of their loser phenomena. Now let's take John. Now he just either his wife died or he just gets out of a treatment center or whatever you want to look at it, he doesn't understand that alcohol causes the sexual dysfunction, right? And so he goes to see this widow lady one night, and he isn't able to do anything. And much to poor John's surprise, chagrin, and embarrassment, he is shocked. So he goes to see his friendly family doctor, right? The natural thing to do. And he goes to the doctor, says, what are you here for, John? Sexual dysfunction? My God, John, how old are you? 55? What the hell do you expect, John? That's a dumb doctor that thinks anybody quits having sex at 55. Actually, Maurice Chevalier put that correctly. He said the only difference between a 35-year-old man and a 70-year-old man is 35 years' experience. Actually, there is one other difference, and at 35, you usually only need visual stimulation or the thought to have sex, whereas at 70, you do need the tactile stimulation, you need the foreplay thing. But otherwise, basically, really, there is no basic difference between the potential between a 35-year-old and a 70-year-old. But that's another story. What I want to talk about is John. Now, he's getting out of a treatment center. His wife had just died, and he finds himself unable to perform. He goes to see his doctor, and his doctor says, well, what do you expect at 55, John? But you have three problems here that I found in my physical examination that need to be taken care of. In the first place, he says, look how nervous you are. You're shaking and so forth. So John, he didn't know John was just stopped drinking or... because John usually won't go to see him when he's drinking. He don't want him to think he's an alcoholic, so he'll stop drinking a few days before he goes. So John, the doctor says, John, you've got shakes here. You are nervous, and he writes down on John's chart, anxiety and nervous. Then he said, and you also have high blood pressure. And so he writes down, because most alcoholics, when they're withdrawn, have high blood pressure, right? So he writes down hypertension on John's chart. And then he says, and John, you are depressed. And of course, he would be depressed just over his sex life, let alone all of his drinking and all the problems he's in. But he writes down depression on John's chart. And before John leaves, he said, John, you've got three problems that need treatment here, and he doesn't mention a word about the drinking, of course. He says, you are nervous, so here's a prescription for Valium or Librium or Transine or one of those. So now John's alcohol problem has been reignited, if he ever did have any insights on it, as well as a sexual dysfunction problem made doubly worse. The doctor isn't done yet. Don't worry. He says, and here's a prescription for Eldamet or Reserpine or Guanethidine or Ismalin or Wellwolfia or one of those, and that's even worse than the other two for causing a sexual dysfunction. So now John's got a triple whammy. But the doctor isn't done yet. He says, John, and you are depressed. You need some Elavil or Tocopherol or Melaril or Thorazine. And if this guy is ever able to function again, it's going to be a sheer miracle, I can tell you. The reason I included this in the physiological types of sexual dysfunction is because there is some recent research done by Dr. Richard Leeuwenhoek of Harvard University that shows that abstinence causes a lowering of the hormone. I just said a while ago that alcohol over a long period of time causes the male hormone to drop, but also abstinence causes the male hormone to drop. So had we had John abstaining from sex for any reason, then he would have had a lower male hormone level, and he would have had a physiological reason as well as the widow-widower syndrome. To overcome the widow-widower syndrome, according to Masters and Johnson's, all you'd have to do is relearn that part of sex that you had forgotten for a couple of year period of time, and it would have worked out all right. According to Leeuwenhoek, such is not the case with everybody, because that male hormone level actually drops down from disuse, if you will, and in this case, some male hormone medication may very well have helped. Now, I don't suggest for a minute that everybody rush in and take male hormone, but I am saying that there is some recent research to show that this may be of more value than we thought it was for a period of time. Okay, the The next category that I think we'll talk about is the intimacy problems. And intimacy disorders are really situational disorders, if you stop and think about it. And they may, when you have an intimacy sexual dysfunction disorder, you may be sexual dysfunction with one person, but not with another person. There may be some situations that you will be dysfunctional with, where not with the others. Now, up to this time, I've been talking about the effects of alcohol that would occur and interfere with your sex life, no matter who your sexual partner was or where they are.